From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Opponents of the Pebble Mine are outraged by a CNN report showing that Governor Mike Dunleavy has signed letters helpful to the mine that were essentially written by Pebble Limited Partnership.
I was appalled.
Catherine Carscalin of Dillingham is the director of the Commercial Fishermen of Bristol Bay. She and other fishermen say the proposed mine would threaten salmon streams that flow into the bay, endangering the region's economy and cultures.
I mean, we've known that this administration is working closely with the Pebble Partnership, but this goes above and beyond what I ever suspected.
CNN's report is drawn from emails it obtained through a records request of the governor's office. It focuses on one letter in particular. Dunleavy sent it in April to the Corps of Engineers, objecting to an extension of a public comment period. It was lifted nearly word for word from a draft letter Pebble's chief of staff emailed to the governor's office. In response to the story, Dunleavy spokesman Jeff Turner said it's common practice for an administration to request briefing materials about particular projects. Turner declined to do a recorded interview. Pebble, in a written statement, says it has a good relationship with the governor because he understands the mining industry and wants a fair process for the proposed mine. Mine opponent Rick Halford says the CNN report shows Pebble and the governor's office are coordinating to an extent that's inappropriate.
Basically, using the governor's office as a pass-through for Pebble propaganda.
Halford, a former state senator, says Dunleavy has undercut his fair process argument by letting Pebble write his letters.
I generally believed the governor when he was saying that he hadn't taken a position, but this doesn't really fit very well with that.
Pebble needs a Corps of Engineers permit to develop the gold deposit in Southwest Alaska. Other government agencies have criticized a draft environmental study the Corps prepared, saying it likely understates the risk. Governor Mike Dunleavy says his recent interviews with national news outlets were intended to put Alaska on the map in an effort to draw investor interest and further diversify the oil-reliant economy. Dunleavy spoke with reporters in Alaska by teleconference yesterday from Washington, D.C. The call followed meetings this week with members of President Donald Trump's administration and a speech to the Conservative Heritage Foundation. He said he also did interviews in New York. Dunleavy says he wants to highlight Alaska as a viable option for potential investors or businesses. State budget cuts reduce the amount of service provided by the Alaska Marine Highway System this winter. Right now, only 4 of the 11 ferries owned by the state are in service. As KHNS's Henry Leisha reports, the limited sailing schedule not only affects passengers, but ferry employees as well.
Craig Allen works as a bosun for the Alaska Marine Highway System. He first joined AMHS in 2005.
So I chose the ferry system because it seemed like a viable option in Haines and provide year-round work and provide an income that could take care of a family.
When he's working, he manages some of the deck crew to do general maintenance on the ships and oversees loading and unloading of cargo. He has a permanent position on the Malaspina, but that ship is in layup indefinitely.
Yes, it means that I'm displaced, and based off of my seniority is where the system determines where I end up working. The more senior people go to work first.
With 14 years of AMHS experience under his belt, Allen has some seniority. He gets calls from dispatch to fill in when a crew member can't work unexpectedly. When that happens, he needs to get to a larger port like Juneau or Ketchikan to start work on the ship. But with limited winter transportation from his home in Haines, he has lost out on opportunities to work on Southeast Alaska ferries like the Taslina.
I was supposed to, but I couldn't make it because of the most recent winter storm that we had. I couldn't travel to Juneau to start the assignment. So someone on on-call status was able to take that position and work it. And I had to then, therefore, use personal leave to gain an income.
Allen is part of the Inland Boatmen's Union, which represents about 400 AMHS employees. IBU spokesman Rob Arnold says that about 120 IBU members are working on the ships that are in service right now.
You know, all 400 of our members are rotating through these ships. The ones with seniority are working. The rest of them are probably looking for other jobs or on unemployment or just not working at all. We've had a lot of people retiring. I have a concern about summertime if we're going to be even able to crew up the ships with you know, all the majority of the ships running.
Sailing the ships is only part of the work, though. During the winter, some crew members perform maintenance on the ships that are docked. However, this year's budget cuts have reduced the number of those shoreside jobs.
You know, normally the IBU will come in and do all the maintenance and painting and deferred maintenance that these ships actually need. But we haven't been able to do that because of the budget.
The number of people employed by AMHS is declining. According to Department of Transportation spokesperson Meadow Bailey, there are 768 employees currently working for AMHS. That's about 250 fewer than there were 5 years ago. Back in Haines, Allen says the makeup of the AMHS crew is beginning to change as well. Employees who have been with the system for a long time are exploring other options.
It is becoming a system that has younger individuals, or rather individuals with less service time, because there's less capability to have a long-term or year-round or near year-round employment with the system.
AMHS employees' ability to work depends largely on funding. Last year, the legislature reduced state funding for the ferry system by $43 million. Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposed budget for the next fiscal year provides flat funding for AMHS. In the spring, the Department of Transportation commissioned research firm Northern Economics to examine options for reducing the state's financial obligation to the Marine Highway. The research firm's report is expected to be released this month. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
Members of Alaska's congressional delegation have announced a 2-year extension for payments to rural communities to be included in final appropriations bills this year. Alaska Public Radio reported payments from the Secure Rural Schools and the Payment in Lieu of Taxes programs will fund school operations and maintenance, roadwork, and special projects in communities near national forest land. The schools program provided nearly $11 million to Alaska communities this year, while the Payment in Lieu of Taxes program paid more than $30 million to cities, boroughs, and census areas from Southeast Alaska to North Slope in 2019. Alaska legislative aides who move to Juneau for sessions would be paid a stipend of $30 per day under a policy adopted by the Legislative Council. Life in Juneau became more expensive for aides last year. That's because a new law made it so that they could no longer deduct their housing costs as a business expense on their federal income tax return. Senate President Kathy Geisel says the new stipend will make it easier to hire and keep qualified staff members. She was concerned about the federal tax change.
It has a significant impact. And I just want to make sure that we are being attentive to that so that we can retain the institutional knowledge that we have in some wonderful staff folks.
Geisel is an Anchorage Republican. The value of the stipend may be greater than what aides received before the federal change. For example, an aide paying $2,000 per month in housing expenses in a 25% tax bracket would have received a tax benefit of $500 per month. The stipend will be roughly $900 per month. It's based on the same per diem rate administration workers are paid. All 12 council members present voted for the change, but North Pole Republican Senator John Coghill says he struggled with the proposal. He says aides are paid well.
The concern I have is that we're getting to the place where I think it might be a little too high.
But Coghill says the effect of the tax change persuaded him to vote for the new policy. Up to 120 aides can move to Juneau for sessions. If that number received stipends for a 121-day session, the cost to the state would be more than $400,000. Groups trying to block oil development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge want a commitment from a Wall Street heavyweight this week. The investment bank Goldman Sachs says it won't finance ventures to explore or develop oil prospects in the refuge or elsewhere in the Arctic. Ben Cushing of the Sierra Club has been pressing financial institutions to adopt such environmental policies, and several European banks already have.
Goldman Sachs, with their policy that they just released, became the first major U.S. bank to rule out funding for Arctic oil, as well as for new coal-fired power projects.
Other companies that restrict financing for Arctic drilling are Royal Bank of Scotland, Barclays, and HSBC.
I don't think they're much more than symbolic.
Economist Nick Loris focuses on energy issues at the Heritage Foundation. He says the bank policies aren't going to prevent drilling in the refuge.
If there's economic interest in oil and gas development in the state of Alaska, someone is going to finance them.
Governor Mike Dunleavy said in an interview on Fox News that the state will have to reevaluate its relationship with Goldman Sachs in light of the bank's policy. The Department of Interior is in the final phase of its environmental review and is expected to schedule an auction for drilling rights to the coastal plain of the refuge in early 2020. The Justice Department has charged an Anchorage contractor with fraud, saying he received kickback payments for a snow removal contract at a local VA hospital. 57-year-old Dale Johnson pleaded guilty to a single count of conspiracy for his role. He agreed he had misused his eligibility status under a preferential contracting program for military veterans with service-connected disabilities operating small businesses. Johnson's business got a 2-year contract valued at about $750,000 for snow removal. But as prosecutors lay out, Johnson's business operated as a pass-through entity for another operation that was ineligible for the contract. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ryan Tanzi prosecuted the case.
Mr. Johnson received $54,000 approximately in kickback payments.
Johnson could receive up to 5 years in prison and hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. The National Park Service says it plans to limit the opening of the Denali National Park Road in 2020 due to the severe collapse of a hillside along the route. Fairbanks Daily News Miner reported the park's 92-mile road is expected to open only to mile 43, just before the Polychrome Pass at the start of the summer season. Park officials say a section of road called Pretty Rocks has become increasingly unstable. Officials say restricting access to the only road into the park will prevent travel to popular sites, including Polychrome Overlook, Toklat River Rest Stop, and Stony Hill Overlook. A Washington State report says 4 federal hydroelectric dams along the Snake River bring both benefits and liabilities to the region, and there's no clear consensus on whether the giant structures should be removed or retained. The report, released today, says the dams are blamed by many for declining salmon runs in the Columbia Snake River system. The salmon are a key food source for killer whales, which are also endangered. The 4 dams are Ice Harbor, Lower Monumental, Little Goose, and Lower Granite, and they're located on the Snake River between the Tri-Cities of Washington and Lewiston, Idaho. And here's a look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau area. Tonight, numerous snow showers. Snow accumulation around 1 inch, lows around 30. Saturday, numerous snow showers. Snow accumulation around 1 inch, highs in the mid-30s. Sunday, widespread snow showers and numerous rain showers, highs in the mid-30s. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Friday, December 20th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.